So let's get this show on the road. Hello, Micah, not Marco.
Hi, Joe. Micah, not Marco.
I would just like to start the show by saying you will notice that someone else is here and Marco is not. And that is because we all love Marco, but Marco is very busy. And he's had a conference and he's doing tech startup stuff and he's having his birthday. And so he has a jam-packed full schedule of awesome, amazing, stressful things. And as such, I have Micah Sargent here, the senior editor from Newsy, to discuss things with me as well, because he's also a person and we can talk. It's amazing how we have this technology to do this.
Weird how this works. It's
Yeah.
I'm worried about Marco, being that he's got all this stress because, he's turning another year older and stress gets harder on the body as you age.
Oh.
Don't tell him I said that.
No, he'll never hear of it. So Micah, you were also a prolific podcaster, which is mostly how I came to know of you, and we chit chat about podcasting things sometimes. So
And Star Trek.
what podcasts are you on, and could you describe some of the nuances of them for the audience?
Well, yes, a fine connoisseur of podcasts. No, I am on three podcasts regularly, and hopefully not any more than that. I do a podcast called Integrate with my good friend AJ Feather. Yes, that is a real last name, and yes, it is awesome. Where we talk about integrating technology in your life. So it's kind of like it's a show for the every person. We don't want to dive. So it's not ATP. We don't want to dive super far into tech topics where we're talking about coding and things like that. And when we do, we try to check each other a little bit. One time I let AJ go a little far on algorithms and I didn't kind of pull him back in. And our friend was like, "Listen, you have to make him stop doing that." So, anyway, it's a show about like how we've added different types of technology to our lives and how that's helped make things better or faster or stronger or what have you. And then we always end the show by recommending some type of app or product or something to integrate into your life. So I try to throw in a few puns and things here and there. And yeah, you should
A
totally check that
few.
one out. A lot of puns. AJ and I pretty much just know that neither of us is very funny, and so we just laugh at each other a lot. So yeah, if that sounds like something you want to listen to, two people inflating each other's egos, then check out Integrate. I really sold that there. The other podcast I'm on is called Isometric, and some of you may have heard of that. Podcast with Brianna Wu, Steve Lubitz, Georgia Dow, and previously Maddie Myers, now Micah Sargent. It's a gaming podcast, but it is like the loosest definition that you could possibly give this show because it comes with the ruse of being a gaming podcast where you talk about video games, but really it's just kind of four people getting together and talking about their unique perspectives involved in gaming and then also kind of surrounding tech culture. Lately, we've added a new section to the show where people call in and leave their questions and things like that. And we've brought Casey List to justice. We've had our dear leader, Stephen, on the show, Stephen Hackett on the show. And yeah, it's a fun one. And then last but not least is Cartoon Cast, which I do with a far more prolific podcaster, the incredible, inimitable Christina Warren, where as an adult, she and I talk about our love for cartoons and how we are unabashedly ashamed to love them. So yeah, those are the three shows that I do. And if any of those sound interesting to you, you should totally check them out.
That was quite a sales pitch.
Ooh, elevator pitch.
So yeah, lean back, put your feet up.
I wish I could.
So I would just like to start off by saying one of the reasons why I was hoping to do this now is because we have entered the dreaded month of March, and this is an important month for listeners of the show because back in our episode about the Apple TV fourth generation being released, Marco and I had a somewhat tiny itty-bitty heated back and forth about why the product was released with so many deficiencies and Marco's projection that it'll all be fixed in March. Uh-huh. Now, we are in March, so they technically have the remainder of the month, and hopefully Marco's schedule will allow us to have a conversation where I can hold him accountable at the end of the month. But for right
bring
now,
bring Marco to justice.
Yes. But for right now, we'll just go through where things are currently sitting. And I have to say, for me, things are currently sitting very firmly in the I have a $160 Netflix box. And I don't know if that is also the case for you, Micah, but I believe in our conversations we have had in private that it completely 100% is. So would you care to talk about that?
Yeah. In the meantime, I'm getting shirts printed up that say I have a $160 Netflix box. Look, sorry, Marco, but you're wrong.
He's never going to let you back on the show, by the way.
Right. Yeah, I've said he was old, and now I'm telling him he's wrong. But I mean, like, okay, here's the thing is that when I was listening to that episode, I wanted Marco to be right. I wanted it so badly. And also, I was really just, you know, uncomfortable because you two were just really disagreeing. And there's actually a review in the iTunes store where it's me begging you guys to be friends. So yeah, you should check that out sometime if you haven't. And anyway, look, I wanted the Apple TV to be a fantastic thing and to, you know, be the change that I wanted to see in the world. Because I had the Apple TV the generation before, and I got made fun of hardcore because I bought it knowing that there was going to be a new one coming out. But I have two TVs, and so it was just like, I'll just move that one to the other room, and then whenever the new one comes, I'll use that. Well, I got it, and it does the same thing that the old one does, except it costs more money, and it is promised to do more. And that is, I watch Netflix on it, not even Hulu. You put out a tweet earlier that asked, you know, what do you do besides watch Netflix and Hulu? And I said no, and that's because not even Hulu. So it's very much not lived up to my expectations or my desires to have this thing that, you know, Tim Cook was hyping on stage. You know, I got it, I opened it up, I was like, this is really cool. And I used it, and I liked it for the first day and, you know, the second day. And then after that, it's just like, why did I pay for this whenever I could have, I don't know, plugged my computer into the side of my TV? And that would have been better because at least it doesn't crash all the time.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I also had a third generation, but I had it for much longer. And mm-hmm. that was back when it was still $100 for the third generation before they did the big price drop and everything. Mm-hmm. And that is also a device that my boyfriend has, and we still use the third generation at his apartment. He doesn't see any reason to use a fourth generation Apple TV at all. He's like,
good for him.
Yeah, he's like, see, all the apps do the same thing. It's the same. It's exactly the same. And I'm like, it's slightly different, but he's very adamant about how similar it is. But the thing is, that is actually kind of true because functionally, it has Netflix and it has all of the same basic things that you would look for. If you look at the featured apps that are inside of the tvOS app store, most of them are the little channels that are available on the third gen. So if you want to have like Tastemade or something, which I'm not an enormous fan of because I find its bite-sized content a little annoying, but it is available. And
if you want to have Newsy, it's also available.
Yes, but it's not very subtle. But it's that Tastemade, like even my boyfriend was like, yeah, it works even better on the third gen than on the fourth gen, because on the fourth gen they actually added all this cool sliding in and out, like up and down, like directional design mm-hmm. to the whole interface. And on the fourth gen, it's just like click click button click click button. And so that is something that appeals more to him than the fancier, snazzier interface. And I can't blame him. It's really hard to argue that point.
Right.
And like personally, even though I had sent out that informal survey of mine where I had asked what other cord cutters were you using besides Netflix and Hulu, and I only excluded them because I knew that those were the bound to be the two biggest things right. that people were using based on my previous searches and investigations. But I don't use Hulu either. I don't see much of a need for its content. I suppose mm-hmm. if I watched Arrow or something that it would be appealing to me, but I got nothing.
Alas, I do not.
Yeah, that just basically leaves me with Netflix and with things that I rent or purchase off of iTunes. And when I asked people what they were using it for, most of them did not reply that they were using it for rentals or for things off of iTunes. Almost everyone replied mm-hmm. that they were using Plex. And that's interesting to me because Plex is not exactly a revenue-generating platform.
Right.
So it's peculiar that that is a feature that so many people are looking at and seeking out. And it is also not something that is exclusive to the Apple TV. Plex is available on a myriad of other streaming devices and boxes and TVs and whatever, and you can hack it and put it on your toaster. Plex is out there. So then it becomes, well, what's so unique? And when I went through and I was looking at all the things that people were saying, I was like, none of this is really like super unique to the service. Like there's, you know, PBS, there's Showtime, there's HBO. HBO was one of the things more often mentioned. There's YouTube. And it's like, well, yeah, duh. Like it doesn't sound like it's such a breakthrough thing, like figuring this exactly. stuff out, but it's just like, yeah, this all makes absolute perfect sense. So it's fascinating to me when it was like, oh, the future of TV is apps, and it's not, because it's exactly the same stuff that we basically already have and basically already have everywhere else, and it hasn't really upended anyone else's control over the market, and that the flagship apps that are featured in the tvOS app store, most of them require a cable or satellite subscription, which some people said they were using those apps. And I asked very politely, I said, cord cutters, and they're like, oh, well, I borrow it. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And so it's one of those things where it's just like, so we haven't really disrupted this market at all. There's zero disruption available here.
It's shocking that, it's shocking to me because A, you do hear the people that kind of come out of the woodwork and they're like, but it's the best device ever. Whenever, and then you had, you know, the Apple behemoth hyping this thing. And then the shocking part is working at Newsy means knowing like where all of our videos show up and kind of getting an idea of those different audiences and insert other buzzwords here. And so we've got every single streaming box and every single type of over-the-top TV device and service and this and that and the other, so that we can see how Newsy looks on those different platforms. And the other day I was doing some marketing work and filming some stuff for a marketing project. And I was going through and looking at our service on a bunch of different things. And then, I mean, I had this realization where it's like, these are pretty much carbon copies of each other. The interfaces are different. But when it comes to what's actually available, it's all the friggin' same. And something like Sling TV, for example, is a service that's available on a lot of these boxes that actually does give a true, like, supplement to the cord cutting experience. And the Apple TV, it seemed, was like promised to do that, and it just hasn't delivered. It's not a true, again, going back to what you said, like, because people have to have some sort of cable or satellite subscription to look at most of the stuff that would in theory replace the things that they're cutting, you know what I mean? Like, unless you've got a friend who's doing that, then you're not cutting the cord. You still got the cord. And so, I don't know, this box was kind of hyped as our cord cutting messiah, and it has been not that at all. It has been my new way to watch Netflix on my TV, and that just makes me sad. Now, you said you use AirPlay. What do you use AirPlay for? Can you talk more about that?
Sometimes I'm watching a video that's on my phone, and then I'm like, you know what would be nice? To watch this on a larger screen. And so then I push a button. Now,
and it works sometimes.
Works sometimes. Yeah, see, the thing is that AirPlay is imperfectly executed. I had AirPlay problems on the third gen Apple TV, and I've had AirPlay problems with fourth gen Apple TV. It's not unique to either device. I can't remember if I heard Jason Snell or somebody else say this, but basically it's like, it's a kludgy thing behind the screen, behind the scenes, where they put the whole thing together to work, and it's sort of like, sort of a surprise that it works at all, I guess. But it's sort of interesting and annoying all at once, because mm-hmm. without it, even the chance of failure, you do miss it. Like when I was, I bought a Amazon Fire Stick to test out with, and I was like, you know, I actually do miss AirPlay, because if I was listening or watching something right now, I could just push a button and then it'd be theoretically there. But it doesn't really work that way because there's no AirPlay. But with things like the Apple TV, even when it's sometimes working, it'll usually work for most of the time, but it does crap out occasionally. And I've watched feature-length movies, and it'll maybe go out once or twice, and it's like, don't touch your phone when it's going, and don't touch the box when it's going. Just let them both just sit there, and maybe you'll mm-hmm. be fine. It's like they're very
hope
carefully,
a message doesn't pop up.
Yeah, they're very carefully balanced on one another. But the, you know, sometimes you just get kicked back, and it's like, connection lost, and you got to go find the device again, and you got two Apple TVs showing up with a parentheses and a number next to them, and that is one of the more frustrating aspects of it. Also, I am 100% convinced that my Apple TV is kicking my MacBook off of my Wi-Fi network. Because every day that I use my Apple TV and then I come back to use my MacBook later on in the day or next morning or something, it's like not on Wi-Fi. And I'm like, why is that exactly? And sure enough, the Wi-Fi network's there. And I'm like, well, what is happening? I even got one of those dialog boxes that came up, like, something else on your network is trying to use the same address. And I'm like, oh God.
No.
Yeah, because it's Apple stuff. I have an Apple TV, an Apple AirPort Extreme base station, and I have a mm-hmm. MacBook, and I have an iPhone. And for some reason, they can't get along, which is one of those things where it's like, if only the same company had made all of these devices, wouldn't that be magical? But it's sort of amazing to me that that AirPlay is as problematic as it is. And even when it's working correctly, you can still do things like try to use your phone in the meantime and go to like the Photos app to send somebody a photo on Twitter or something like that. And then all of a sudden your AirPlay connection has changed because it mm-hmm. is showing you your photos on your TV. And you're like, I didn't tell you to do that. You're not in AirPlay mirroring mode. Why are you doing that? Like, you should just be doing the app thing that I just had open. And sure enough, it's like, nope, I got this. I'm going to do this thing now. I'm helping. And I'm like, no, you're not helping me at all. So it can be...
Please stop helping.
Yeah, it can be really frustrating. Add on top of that, the Apple remote fiasco, which we've also talked about with Marco at length, that the absence of that makes the process of setting up a new one a total pain in the tuchus. But even having the old one back, it's very clear that wasn't really anyone's plan, because all of the dialogues inside that application still, to this day, are designed for the older version of the Apple TV. It's not really coming across clearly to me that anyone had a good idea that this was going to be this way. And you, of course, hear Eddie Q's comments that he's made several times. I think first originally in like Bloomberg or something like that, and then like on the talk show when he appeared, and it's like, yeah, we're working on a new remote app that's going to be amazing. You'll be able to do all the same stuff and do the Siri things and be able to, you know, use all the accelerometer features. Yeah, and it's like, well, that was a cool feature you guys could have developed in the four intervening years that you were working on the TV, but it's one of those things where it's just like that product management ship has sailed, and this is definitely not anyone's plan, and it doesn't seem like it was ever anyone's plan to put this much effort into a remote application, which really like makes me scratch my head and wonder like what were you guys thinking, guys?
Yeah, I don't know where did we go wrong? No, I don't get why they released it when they did. I mean, I know that you've had this conversation too, but I think I saw something earlier. Somebody said something. It wasn't even that it was like half-baked. It's that it wasn't even put in the oven. And that is exactly how to describe this whole thing, because it just feels like it's falling apart at the seams, like they forgot to add the glue on all of the joints or whatever. And it just, as time goes on, instead of it getting better, it's kind of like I'm realizing even more things that frustrate me. You know, we'd had a conversation earlier on Twitter, a long conversation about force quitting apps, because Hair Force One said that you need not force quit apps to save battery, which got us on the subject and my realization that I have force quit more apps on my Apple TV than I ever have, or than I do on my phone.
But yeah, your battery life for your TV must be amazing, though.
Exactly, it's so good. I'm always in the green. It boggles the mind that like when I open up Netflix every single time. Every time I open up, if I go away and I come back and I open up Netflix, every time I get the same error, and it's like, we're having trouble connecting or something like that. And then I hit okay and it bumps it back to the main screen and then it ends up spinning for a really long time. And I'm like, I don't feel like waiting for this to stop spinning. So I just kill the app. I go back into it and then everything works just fine. And I understand that Netflix is a third party app and maybe there's something to do with Netflix, but here's why I'm not giving Apple the benefit of the doubt, is because so many of the other things involved with the Apple TV have been an issue where it's like, I don't know. I don't really want to blame Netflix because they've always done me right. And you guys just keep doing me wrong.
That's actually really interesting, because I haven't had to force quit Netflix like you have. I haven't had that spinning problem, but I have had that same situation occur for other apps. When I was doing like my app testing and downloading a bunch and trying them out, especially mm-hmm. with some of the games for some reason are buggier than anything else. We can talk about how great a gaming platform this device has turned out to be. But
can I gripe about the remote first?
Well, I mean, the remote's one of those things where it's like the ship has sailed. It's not going, nobody's going to fix this remote. Although
no, the remote's, yeah, the remote is what it is.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a disappointment.
but I do appreciate that they finally are working on a software update, which theoretically is supposed to be released in March of all times, where it's going to be more difficult to accidentally trigger the scrubber when you try to pick up your remote upside down because it's poorly designed. Because they're going to make it so you have to actually press down on the touch surface first in order to bring that up, so then that way you're not triggering that view. Now, I don't think that necessarily solves the design problem of the remote being not good, but, you know,
it's a bandage for something that was already broken. Yeah, because, I mean, you're basically like a scared kitten going up to grab the remote and hope to God that you don't slip your finger a little bit forward, because then, oh, it's going to sense. And, oh, no, I had something metal sitting on, like, there was a fork near where I was sitting, and I accidentally brushed the thing up against it. And so now it's scrubbing back 3 days in the friggin' thing.
Wait, why do you, I got a question. Why,
okay,
why do you have,
I have an answer, I hope.
Why do you have a fork near your remote?
That was not necessarily the case. I don't. Oh. There was one point where I was like, I was eating and I was sitting at a table and I couldn't remember what the metal thing was. It was foil. I was sitting at like a TV tray thing, and as I moved the remote up, it like brushed against the foil, and it was like, this must be a finger because there is electricity, and so there's a connection.
Foil's not like conductive, but maybe it was the heat or something. If you had heated up something in it, I don't know. But regardless. It is very easy to trigger that. There's nothing to really do about the remote at this point in time.
Asparagus, rubber band.
Oh, yeah. This is one of those hacks. And then I saw somebody else had, like, gaffer tape. They put, like, bright red gaffer tape they put on the bottom half of it.
I was just going to say, I'm the terrible human who bought the leather loop thing because I couldn't fathom the idea of putting asparagus on there. Asparagus rubber band or gaffer tape on there. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to spend however much it is to install this so that I don't get upset every single time I pick up the remote, because the Thunderbolt port looks exactly like the IR blaster area. And so you can never tell which way is up, because of course it has to look the exact same way, because this is how we design things symmetrically, and symmetrical is always best.
These people were drunk. And because it's one of those things where it's just like, when I saw that this software update was announced to prevent this from accidentally being triggered, I was like, oh, good. Someone finally tried to pick up a remote in an Apple lab. Like, after all of this time, after months of this device being out, somebody was like, oh, you know what? That shouldn't do that. It's so weird because it's like everything they're fixing, it's just like, so no one tested that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might have been a situation where they don't have the resources to test it. So I'm not blaming necessarily the developers who are working on the device, but there is a product management step that seems to be missing here, where someone should have checked this and some resources should have been allocated to determine if this worked. And someone should have said, hey, maybe we shouldn't release this, like you said, partially par-baked device. It's so peculiar to me, but that really pales in comparison to the argument for using it over other competing streaming boxes or devices or even things that are built into your TV or computer. Mm-hmm. Now I have a Samsung TV that's several years old, and it unfortunately. It's a plasma TV, so yay, plasma. But it came with smarts inside of it, so boo, smarts. Because they put the terrible things inside of there for their Netflix client, which is buggy and weird and does weird refresh things. I tried it out on several occasions. It's not good.
Oh, I have a good Netflix client in my smarts, which makes me sad too, because I have one TV that doesn't, you know, like it's got the other Apple TV hooked up to it. And it's just kind of like, I come home, how am I feeling? Am I feeling like watching Netflix on the Apple TV or on my smart? And yeah, it just depends on the day. So
well, what's your TV of choice? What's your poison?
LG.
Ah. So is it it's not the new webOS one though.
It's not that super like thin one. I honestly don't know. I got a Samsung one and an LG one at the same time for downstairs and for my living room and for my bedroom.
You just wanted to mix it up.
And
you don't want one to get the edge on the market.
See, that's the thing. Like, I don't know why I didn't get both of them at the same time. Like, both the same brand. I didn't realize it until later. I think I was just looking at deals, and because they're two different sizes. And so I was probably just looking at sales. And it was only later that I, like, the dark side of me pointed out to the side of me that gets bothered by those types of things. Like, haha, you bought two different brands of TV. I'm like, doggone it. Why didn't I just keep... I'm very weird about, like... I don't know. Things have to be
matching,
symmetrical. Yeah. Yeah, they have to match. It's nice
to
when
match
they
match. Like lightning ports and IR blaster ports, but
yeah, exactly.
But the yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't have a nice client on my TV. The Xbox client, no, it's not even. I don't even know why anyone would turn on the Xbox to do that. But I guess it was novel when it came out. Because what was that, like 2008 or 2009 or I can't even remember. Where they added the Netflix client, but only if you were an Xbox Gold or something member.
Yeah,
it was weird.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, because that's the worst way to watch Netflix. Please don't do that, because you get a spinning fan for no reason. Then there's the old third-gen Apple TV, which has a really clumsy interface for finding mm-hmm. things to watch. But if you kind of want to just... If you're fortunate enough to land on whatever it is then you're okay. But if you're not, then you're like up and down through menus for the rest of your life. And typing on the square keyboard, which while it is superior in terms of speed to the long keyboard, it's still not an optimal way of interacting with your electronics device. I don't know about you, but I prefer a grid layout keyboard to the For sure. horizontal one.
The horizontal one is also BS. What does that offer? How is that superior?
Well, see, the thing is, you can move really fast from one side to the other. Only problem is the swiping area is like what, 2 inches? So you can't like, so then you're just sitting there like swiping, swipe, and then it's just like, this is stupid. And you can very easily overshoot things when you're swiping because it's not as precise. But that's, you know, neither here nor there. I just wish they would revise that. Now, you can use if you use a universal remote with your TV, or if you use the remote app, then you don't have that problem because you'll get the grid layout for a universal remote, or you can just use the text entry on the iPhone or your iPad.
Which you couldn't do originally. We shouldn't
know. Yeah, because logins, that was for fun. I remember the halcyon days of logging into services. But the thing is that I compare it to something like, and this is why I was so curious and bought an Amazon Fire TV stick. Terrible name, really. But I had heard so many bad things about Amazon and their TV efforts and their hardware, and I had bought the ridiculous tablet. And it's cheap, whatever. And because I was just curious what things were like in this ecosystem, which had all started with my I don't know, rage quitting of trying to use my iPhone to play music and switching to an Amazon service. I was just like, so show me all of your services. And this had eventually led to the tablet and led to the stick, as things do. Always tablets, always sticks.
Yes.
But in the end, it's always a stick. But the device plugs into the HDMI port. You just got that. Okay, so the device plugs into the HDMI port. You get a little power cable thing, and I mean little. One consistent thing between the tablet and the TV is that Amazon likes to sell you the smallest possible power cord that they can get away with. And they like to use micro USB A, which is like the one that's sort of trapezoidal with the little prongy things on the back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And every time you put a micro USB metal thing into the little metal sleeve that's inside of the plastic device, it always feels like you are going to break something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have to say kudos to Apple for Lightning. Like it doesn't ever feel like I'm going to break anything when I'm using my Lightning port and Lightning cable. So I go ahead and I plug in the whole thing, and I've got my remote, which has batteries in it, like an old school, silly remote that you wouldn't want to use. The whole back of it slides off, though, so you don't have like that little dangly, like compression panel thing that always bobbles around. So it's not as bad as like your TV remote, but it's not great, and it's, you know, plasticky, whatever. You can start it up, and it's got CEC, so it'll start your TV up. It doesn't really turn off your TV, and it has no volume controls, which is actually, of all of the terrible things that I can say about the Siri remote, the one positive thing that I have to give Apple is that they foresaw the need to adjust volume on your television. So it is good that it is there, and it is bad that Amazon was not like...
It's the one thing they tested in the lab. Oh, we should have a volume button. Yeah, that's a good idea.
You know, so it's not all terrible for the Apple remote. You hear that, Apple? You hear that? Who I'm sure no one's listening, but it can do exactly two
volume.
Things. Volume up and volume down, and I like both of those. And on the Amazon equivalent, you don't get that. It's actually really irritating because there are several times I want to adjust the volume as I go through the interface because, you know, every movie or TV show or music item will be slightly mastered differently. Mm-hmm. It's not all like equalized to a perfect stream of I only need to adjust my volume one time on my television for the next 8 hours or something. So you frequently have to adjust the volume, and I can't imagine why on the second revision of this Fire TV stick they weren't like, oh yeah, that's kind of annoying. Let's do something about that. And I don't know if that's because they didn't want to include the part for an IR blaster inside of the remote because it's all, you know, wireless. I have to imagine maybe that's why, because it seems like, you know, since everything else is so cheaply made, I mean, the thing is, you know, $49.99 for the one that comes with an Alexa voice remote, and it's $39.99 for the one that doesn't have one. I like the Alexa. I got the Alexa voice remote, so it's.
Well, you can buy one of those like Prink IR blasters for like 30 cents at the dollar store. So, would an IR blaster really cost them that much?
I don't know. I mean, it all depends on whatever the economics of this are. I couldn't even guess, especially at the scale that they operate and like what countries it's available in and the content arrangement deals.
Profit anyway. They're just like, oh yeah, we came just over budget, so we're good to go. And for some reason, the shareholders are like, all right, cool, let's do another year.
Well, it's all about growth,
right?
Which for some reason,
it's always about growth with sticks.
Yes. So this is interesting to me because it probably comes the closest of the different streaming solutions that I've tried to offering a similar set of features to what Apple offers, other than the missing volume controls and AirPlay and missing anything that is iTunes or Apple branded. It's replaced, of course, by Amazon branded things. So it's not like it's like completely gone and horrible, but it's definitely something you'd notice if you were heavily invested inside the Apple ecosystem and you're like, I really want to listen to Apple Music. It's like, well, tough cookies. but if you're not invested in the Apple Music system because you're like me and you're like, why do you keep messing up everything that I own? You had one job, music app. But then it's actually much easier to make that switch because it's got Netflix, it has Hulu, it has Plex, it has like everything. That you find on the Apple TV, and it also has its own app store, which is full of the same garbage games you wouldn't download anyways. and it comes with Crossy Road for free, which is interesting because they shouldn't have done that because Crossy Road for free clearly demonstrates the technological limitations of the Fire TV stick.
Oh, no.
It chokes on it. And it's just like, you guys probably should hide that and not let anyone download it because it's pretty embarrassing that can't do that.
That's terrible. Why? No. Why even show it then?
No. And while I don't like playing Crossy Road on the Apple TV, I have to say that hands down that there is no contest in it being a superior experience to using it on the Amazon Fire TV stick. It's just like absurd. But I actually like the way they organize the rest of the interface for content more than I like it on Apple because it's designed around showing you things, the content things that you would want to see or listen to, whereas Apple is designed around the applications, which house the siloed services that you might.
Well, I mean, apps are the future or whatever it is he said. So
yeah, no, I disagree because I think like when people sit down at their TVs, they're like, I want to watch or listen to something now. Show me the things. And this is much more like a TV guide. Every time you start it up, it prepares a list of recent things of new Prime originals and exclusives of apps that you could theoretically want to use, but good luck with that, guys. It's got a Your Videos tab where they mix different things in that are available for you to watch for free or things that you own. And if you use something like Disney Movies Anywhere because you own any Marvels or Star Wars films, then all of those purchases are also there. And so it's like this is a pretty well-rounded experience, I have to say. It's not perfect, and it has rough edges, and it doesn't do everything the Apple TV does, notably the AirPlay. But
and volume up and down.
Volume up and down. Jesus. I mean, I have to have... Also, I made the mistake earlier. I was like... this morning, I stopped by my apartment on my way to work, and I was just like, you know, I'm going to fire up the TV and play with Alexa. And so I did, and then I was like, wow, this is way too loud. But my TV remote isn't next to me. But my Apple TV remote is next to me, so I adjusted the volume with that.
Oh my gosh, that has to hurt all of those people who work at Apple that are listening. Oh, wait.
No, but the problem is I adjusted the volume with that, and it kicked it over with the HDMI CAC.
It turned it on. Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, so it's like, you want to use your Apple TV now? And I was like, oh, this backfired horribly because now the music's up.
It's like whenever you accidentally, like there's that person across the room who you really don't want to talk to, and you're talking to your friend about it, and then you say their name, and for some reason, like, there was a lull in the conversation, so the person across the room hears you and comes over, and you're like, shoot. And so in this case, you know, you were having a good conversation with your Fire Stick, and you accidentally whispered Siri, and Siri heard you, and Siri was ready to come interrupt your conversation.
Yeah, and then I was like, well, I can push the home button, which is one of the ways you can start up the Fire TV and make it start up the TV. So I was like, maybe that'll switch it back. Nope. And I was like, well, Siri can't switch inputs, and so I can't switch any inputs of this. And now I've got two remotes in my hands, which do different things, which won't let me do the things that I need. And then I had to get up and go get the TV remote, and I had to be like, okay, switch inputs like an animal, and go to the Apple TV, and then I could, you know,
thankfully, go
back to what I was doing and adjust the volume. So it's an interesting world that I live in right now with these different things around me.
I have an idea.
I live in the future where I have overcomplicated everything in my life. But the other thing that I really think that Alexa is far superior to Siri at any sort of content navigation that I've asked it to do. Mm. It does other things which Siri can't even comprehend, especially like the little skills and stuff that you can give it, because it's exactly like the Amazon Echo version, where because that was, I think, wasn't that the source of it, or was it originally designed for the Fire Phone and then they put it in the Echo? I can't remember.
I honestly can't remember. Yeah, I want to say it was the Echo, but maybe it's just because that was getting all the press because it's so incredible. People feel it is.
Yeah, well, and it was actually getting derided when it first came out because it didn't do much, and most of what it did, Siri would do. But they turned it into much more of a comprehensive service with opening up to third parties and making it more of a smart home appliance, whereas Siri is definitely not in any capacity open or a smartphone or smart home appliance. And it even does different things when you give it queries on your phone and when you give it queries on your TV, which is baffling to me when you
context.
Are asking it,
what? Who'd have thunk? No,
but it's like, there's context where it's like, oh, that makes sense. Like, you can't do that because you're a different device. But then there's other things where it's like, play music. And then it misinterprets what I said for the music thing differently on both. Yeah. And so, like, if you ask it to play an artist, then it might go find a different track from the artist. But it'll do it every single time the same way on each of the two different devices differently. So I think I had, like, asked it to play something by Jerry Goldsmith on both devices. And it had found one thing. The iPhone kept finding the same track and playing it, and then the Apple TV kept finding a different same track and also playing that. And so it was just like, this is sort of peculiar. Now that's inconsistent, but far be it from that being the only problem that it has. But Alexa has worked hands down far better at determining what it is that I'm looking for. It has the same sort of interface in terms of like bringing up an interface in order to be like, yes, I would like to rent that thing. Yes, that is exactly what I had asked you to find. Yeah, I wanted to listen to that music. The way it does music searches is hands down better than anything that I experienced when I was using it, when I was using Siri on the Apple TV to find music. Because it's also pulling from Prime if you ask it to, and you can connect any other Was it Spotify is also available, but I don't have a Spotify account that I use. It's just one of those things that it's just like, this is much more of a complete product
mm-hmm.
in the voice category than Siri is. It's not a complete, much more of a complete product in terms of the actual Fire TV stick. I feel like that is, it's a different set of trade-offs than the Apple TV is. And
right.
notably, the screensaver is not as good.
Oh, so you've got three things now.
Screensavers,
mm-hmm.
volume up and down buttons.
Yes.
And Crossy Road.
Crossy Road. So I've got an idea. I've just sent you a link, and what you're going to do is you're going to buy that $2.47. Is that how much it is? $2.47 with free shipping mini universal remote, and you're just going to get a 3M command strip and attach it to the Fire TV stick remote. And then you can turn your volume up and down, you can switch inputs, and you can power on and off your TV. So that takes care of all of your CEC issues, and you don't have to carry around that other remote anymore.
Micah?
Yeah?
There isn't a chance that I will do this.
Okay, I tried. I tried to take away one of the three things.
Yeah. Well, but I don't know. Now that we've mostly beat up on Apple, but then also said
but
some
also
nice complimentary
thing to beat
up things. On Apple. Yeah. Is there anything else you would really want to contribute to this?
No. So the only thing that I have to say, other than the fact that I, thanks to you, have come to the realization or came to the realization that I am just using it as a Netflix box, and there are loads of other ways to do this, you know, that don't cost as much as the Apple TV does. Cause I don't use AirPlay. I think I've used it, you know, once every, I don't know, 3 months or something. And I do buy things from the iTunes store, particularly buying seasons of shows or like a season pass or something like that. But other than that, I really don't use it for anything. And I tried the gaming on it, and yeah, it's subpar. Sounds like it's not as subpar as the stick, but that's, you know, to be expected because you've got a bigger device. It's also
one third of the cost.
Right. Yeah. See, and that's the thing is like this thing costs a lot for what I end up using it for. And that's what's most disappointing to me, I think, because I would expect more out of it, I guess. You know, a lot of people are happy with theirs and appreciate the things that it does. But I don't know. I just most of that stuff I can get elsewhere and be just as, if not more impressed. And the one thing that I want to say about Amazon is that I had never really played around with the Fire TV. This was the full TV. And I turned it on to go navigate for a marketing project. And I was very impressed with the interface. And it is what you're talking about. I mean, we sit down to, you know, a long time ago, we were fed shows. And, you know, everybody would gather around for the 9 o'clock news and everyone would gather around for their show and, you know, that kind of thing. And then the TVs would stop broadcasting after whatever. And now we have this choice and we have this opportunity. But at the same time of having choice, like we still, or at least for me, and I think that it's something that a lot of other people experience too, is like you sit down to be entertained, not to take that time trying to find something to watch. And it's only because things like Netflix and probably Hulu have built-in recommendation engines that you are even being able to find anything in the first place. Like I can't talk to Siri and be like, you know, I'm not feeling so great today. And, I really didn't like that show that we watched yesterday. So maybe we could watch something that'll cheer me up, but also doesn't have, I don't know, this sort of, it doesn't get that nuanced, but like having watched Netflix for so long, it knows a lot about me, and it knows what I like and don't like, and the recommendations, I guess, there are a bit better. And, you know, whenever you put this content first and you're like, hey, here are some things that you should check out, instead of, hey, here's that screen of apps again, now go dig into one, and then go dig into that menu, and then dig into that menu, and then swipe over here. Oh, you swipe too far. You're going to have to swipe back. Oh no, you hit the wrong. It's not great.
So, yeah. I very much agree with you when you're talking about moods and what you might be feeling when you sit down in front of your television. I think that is a really good point that you made.
Cool.
Oh, I totally derailed you.
No.
Oh, okay.
I
just wanted to pay you the compliment. Sorry.
No, for sure. No, I'm saying, like, I'm glad you felt that way. There's nothing more that I have to add to that. Like, you know, I wish that Siri were better at that. And it seems like other services, not so much that they get me necessarily, but that they offer up things that I want to see rather than just, like, again, a wall of tiles to go check out. And, you know, I've been pretty easy to figure out lately because I've just been watching a crap ton of Star Trek. But that's
really where this whole mood thing comes in. You're like, computer, play something.
Did you know when you ask Alexa what she wants to be what it wants to be when it grows up, it says, I want to be the computer from Star Trek.
Oh, I did not know that.
At least in the Echo. I don't know if that's the rest of the way, which, by the way, I have to say I'm sad. I was hoping that
Alexa, what do you want to be when you grow up? Oh, she says, if growing up means it would be beneath my dignity to climb a tree, I'll never grow up. Never, not me. By J.M. Barrie.
Oh, well, that's a different one.
It's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, not what we were expecting there. Ah, so I was hoping to have a new toy that, gosh, I hate myself sometimes. I was hoping to have a new toy that I got, or that I ordered, but they were, you know, out of stock, and so they just now came back in. I'm not getting it until Monday, but I actually have an Echo on the way, and I was hoping to have it by today so that I could have talked to it during the show. But
When you get it, you need to install Pugbomb.
Who?
Pug bomb.
Okay.
It is a skill. And how it works is you get the Alexa app, and you can add skills, and there's like a sort of like a almost app store-ish kind of thing, but more like, you know, installing a Chrome extension or something like that. Like, there's a thing, and you can search and you can find things. You can also it can see what things are ranked by, and there are like star ratings and stuff, whatever. Not a big deal. Most of it doesn't really apply to you because it'll be like things like Hue lights and stuff like that, and it's just I don't own any of those. What?
I have those.
Oh my god!
That's part of the reason why I want it, because I have a smart home setup.
Oh, this is the missing piece for you then.
Yeah,
it's the keystone that'll tie it all together. The you know, Echo really ties the room together. But so the interesting thing is, like, you can install these skills, and one of them is something that somebody wrote called Pug Bomb, and it just makes up crazy little short story sentences about things that pugs are doing. And
what? That sounds awesome.
Yeah, you just say start Pug Bomb.
I'm watching a cute little pug who is staring longingly at a plate of French toast and scrambled eggs. The poor little guy. He looks so hungry.
It just spits out one, and you say start Pug Bomb four times or something, and it spit out four different little mini pug stories. It has limited utility, but it is, and by limited utility, I mean it's the kind of novelty thing that you like pull out when a friend comes over or something like that, or as I'm explaining to you now, or like, you know, if you're just like in the mood for it, you might fire it up, but it has absolutely no fundamental way to change your life and the way that you live as a human being, so you'll be fine.
Good. No, I pugs are life changing. So I'm really excited about that. I mean, yeah, the main reason I got it is, everyone has been hyping this thing. And one of my coworkers was recently at a conference where Kara Swisher was asked, what is the one thing that is like the most impressive piece of technology, or what's the one thing that she's most excited about, or something like that. And she said, the Amazon Echo. So I had heard that. I had heard all of these people on Twitter and podcasts talking about it. And I just So I've had the Hue lights for a long time, but I only recently upgraded to the new HomeKit base station that lets you talk to Siri to make those changes. And I was, I've not really been that impressed with it. And so I was like, you know what? I also have Spotify, and I like the idea of having an always on way as opposed to, like, you know, having to do the trigger command that I'm not going to say right now because all of my devices will light up. I just like the idea of coming home and being like, okay, I need these lights to go on, and you can make that happen. As well as, again, all of these other different functions and features that it has. And not to be, or not least of all, because my co-host on Integrate loves to brag about his Echo. So finally joining the club there, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I almost bought a Dot. I've been on the fence about buying a Bluetooth speaker for use in my kitchen when I'm like washing dishes and stuff, because for some reason my headphones always and forever get caught on like everything.
Is it not the most frustrating thing? I hate that, especially when I'm doing dishes and like there's water everywhere, and then the headphones start to slide because they get caught, and I'm just like, ah. Rage quit.
Yeah, and you can't really like fix it super easy without getting water everywhere. But it really does. It was a minor annoyance, and I'm like, oh, so I'll go ahead and get a Bluetooth speaker. Like, there are no good AirPlay speakers. Of any reasonable value. But I've been looking at this stuff, and I've been like, oh, I am that Bose Link Sound Link color, whatever it is, the mint one they call it, but it's like sort of a sea foam green, which is like my color. That's mine. I want that color. As you can tell by the fact that half of our logo is like that sort of blue, and then the other half is Marco pink. But the thing is that I have been toying with that, and it's been in my shopping cart, and I've been looking at other things, and like there's a JBL one that's like almost the same color, which is the most important aspect of any speaker.
So the color is the most important.
Yes, exactly. Okay. It used to be a statement piece that I can maybe hear some tinny sound out of. And so I was like, but maybe I should get the Echo. And then I was like, no, I hear all these rumors about new stuff coming out. And this was, you know, a couple of weeks ago. And I was like, there's going to be something new. There's going to be something new. And then sure enough, there was new stuff, but it was a more portable Bluetooth speaker, and it was this bring your own speaker thing. And I was like, oh, wow, I have these two desktop speakers that are over on my desk, which I hardly ever plug into my laptop because it's just sort of annoying. So I could plug it right into there and I'd be all set. Or I could use it with my whole home entertainment theater 5.1 surround sound system. That'd be amazing. And I was thinking these thoughts, and I was like, this isn't really what I was setting up to shop for, and doesn't solve that problem at all. So I'm just not going to do it. But I'm gonna put a pin in it. But it's too late now, apparently, according to...
That's super sold out.
Yeah. I don't know. I follow when I was starting to get into, like, okay, so someone explain Amazon's ecosystem. I was like, I need an expert. I need a guide. I need my Obi-Wan. I need my Yoda. And so I was looking around, and it's like nobody really had anything going on. And then somebody had tweeted a link to John Siracusa about like frame refresh rates that were potentially possible in a developer preview version of the next version of the Amazon Fire OS operating system for TVs. And I was like, oh, that's interesting to me. And sure enough, I go to that website, AFTV News, and they have all this other stuff. And I found out they had a podcast, and it turns out that there's no they, that it's just this one guy, Elias Saba, and he does the most impressive thing, which is talk by himself about a technical subject for an hour, which I can't do. That is mind-boggling. Like how I don't.
Oh, no.
I'm sure you have. You're an expert because you're a newsy senior editor, but I am a lowly human being, so I'm always impressed whenever anybody can actually pull off a podcast that is a solo person podcast.
No. Senior editor does not have a prerequisite of being able to pull off an hour-long podcast, because if it did, I would not be a senior editor. That is, yeah, that's incredibly mind-boggling, especially if you are, like, I'm guessing you listen to the show, and, it, you know, that means that he's actually, you know, interesting the whole time, and that's what would be my main concern. I could probably say things for an hour by myself. My brain, I talk in my brain all day. I don't know. That sounds creepy. Anyway.
I talk in my brain all day too.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So yeah, but, I mean, he's got skills, man, skills.
Well, it's mostly about rooting and stuff, which is horribly, terribly boring. But I skip over that part to the more interesting stuff. But there's, you know, questions and answers and stuff like that. And that's where I found out about the shortage that's starting to develop with the Amazon Echo devices. And there was a shortage just recently that has passed for the Fire Sticks, where they were held up for about a month trying to get those things out the door. And so it does seem to be that there is some sort of supply constraint on the amount of devices that they're able to manufacture right now. They are not scaling up super smoothly because the just announced Echo Dot and Tap. The Tap is May now, and will possibly push even further, and the Dot is now going to be June that you might get it.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. That's very, no, that's Apple-like in the sense of, like, things getting sold out. And what's especially interesting to me is the Dot was only, you could only order it through Alexa, and so the fact that it's sold out means that, in theory, people who have, because I mean, you could have asked a friend, I guess, but people who have some sort of Amazon device with Alexa enabled would have had to make these orders. So it's people who are kind of like already in the ecosystem. So there's of course a balance between the supply, however many they had, and then also this, you know, bit of bewilderment that I have. But regardless, I think that that's interesting that even the Dot is almost sold out, because they did add that kind of level of, I don't know, a bit of a border that you had to climb over to make happen. So interesting.
Yeah. Oh, well. And I saw some people complaining. They're like, oh, but it's the cheap one. Why can't I get it? And it's like, well, obviously they know they can make like five of these things. So they have put this artificial constraint upon it. And honestly, the device seems to be mainly geared towards a home where you might have multiple rooms, where you might have mm-hmm. multiple speakers, you might have multiple Alexas. So it does make some degree of sense why they put that constraint on it. And the funny thing is that any device with Alexa can run it. And so even my lowly Fire TV Stick that I just bought, that can order an Echo Dot if I ask it to. And that goes for any device which is running the new Fire OS 5.0, I want to say 5 or 4. Anyway. Doesn't matter.
Nerd.
Yeah. This is not that kind of a podcast. If you have the most recent update, software update that rolled out to all of the first gen Fire TV sticks and the second gen Fire TV sticks and the first gen Fire TVs and the second gen Fire TVs and the few tablets, I think, that support Alexa, the cheapo tablets do not. And I think the Fire Phone has it, but I think everyone has given up on that and maybe sold them on eBay. So, but I think all of the people with, Fire TVs probably put in an order for a Dot. It sounds like a nice way to move up.
Yeah. Moving on up. I think that it's a good idea, and I wrote a story on, these devices as kind of Amazon is making a clear play for, you know, everyone likes to talk about it as a Trojan horse, the Echo, and Amazon is making a clear play for what will, I think, eventually, slowly but surely, be the way that we all do things, which is having a connected home and reduction in friction. And I had actually done a story, I think it was the day before, kind of, I don't know, clapping back at the, to use a turn of phrase, the people who were naysaying this Wi-Fi connected water pitcher. And here's the thing. Like, when I first heard that Brita and Amazon were partnering up and they were making a water filter that connects to Wi-Fi, I groaned and I rolled my eyes and I thought, this is so stupid. And the amount of extra money that you're paying right now to have a Wi-Fi connected water pitcher simply just to have it be Wi-Fi connected is, it's not excusable. Like, you really have to be committed to having this. But basically what it does is when the filter runs out, then it's connected through Amazon's Dash system, which are those little buttons that people push to order like more Tide or whatever. And then it comes in, you know, the next 2 weeks. And so it'll order more filters for you. Well, someone had written an article where they were kind of talking about how, you know, when you think about the future, you don't want the future to get less convenient. And so, yeah, while a Wi-Fi connected water pitcher that orders the filters for you kind of makes you roll your eyes, at the same time, like, do you want a future where these things aren't already done for us, where we don't have robot tea makers or, I don't know, lights that turn on by themselves whenever I, or not by themselves, but lights that turn on when I ask them to, or, you know, a door that unlocks without me having to do anything. Those are things that are good. And so, or at least are, in my opinion, are good. And those are things that I want. I want a future where I don't have to do as much of the little stuff that we do now. And so if Amazon is making this play and they're pushing into this field and, you know, I don't know if you've paid attention to this part of it, but I imagine you have, the connections that Amazon's Alexa platform and then also the Echo is making with all of these different smart home services. They are, you know, becoming the backbone of all of these services slowly but surely, and kind of being the grapevine that routes into all of them. And I think that that's really, really fascinating. And that's one of the other reasons that I got the Echo, not necessarily for now, but for 2 years in the future, whenever we have even more smart home stuff, but they've all decided to use Alexa as the, like, the smart voice and the interfacing system for it. So I'm excited to see what Amazon does with all of this. And it's just fascinating to me. And then again, I also get a little, I don't know, annoyed whenever people are like, why are you making a new thing that makes things easier for me? That's ridiculous. Why, you know, we don't do anything for ourselves anymore. Let's pick ourselves up by our bootstraps and Trump 2016. Wait,
no. But yeah, I get some of that, the guilt trippiness of it, of like, why would you buy such a thing? Or why would you get these things delivered? And like, you know, think about the ability to do this stuff for yourself. And it's like, well, you can make that argument about like anything. Like, you don't need electricity in your house, you'd survive without it. So right. it's like the conveniences that we afford ourselves are hopefully making our lives more convenient. So I'm not buying the Wi-Fi connected water pitcher, but you know right. what, in 10 years maybe I will have a Wi-Fi connected water pitcher and everyone will have one. It'll just be totally normal and nobody will bat an eyelash, and that's going to be the weirdest part of all, is looking back on a time before we had Wi-Fi connected water pitchers. Could you even imagine
back in my day?
Yeah, I mean, because it's one of those things where it's just like people are very quick to dismiss some of these convenience features because they are absurd in mm-hmm. in a vacuum, if you just look at them in a vacuum. But, you know, that's how we have Uber or Postmates or Prime Now or whatever. I mean,
or a remote for our television. There was a time when we didn't have remotes for our TV, and then someone was like, wow,
you could get up
nice
and push the button. I mean, I could have got up and pushed the volume up and down button if I even knew where they were on the TV. This modern TVs. What are you going to do?
But I know, yeah. And I mean, frankly, now those TVs, they all have like locks on them. They're practically trying to make it so that, but that's beside the point.
Yeah. But I think this was a good talk about the future of society. And about TV not going anywhere.
About it being March and that TV not doing so well.
Yeah.
Dear Marco, I want you to know that my pokes at you are only in jest. And I think that you're a stand-up guy. And I didn't mean any ill will toward you. So thanks for letting me take your place today on this here show.
Yes. What he said. You're okay, Marco.
Also, I'm kidnapping Justin Trudeau. You can't have him back.
Oh, well, that got more awkward then. But One last thing I forgot to mention when we were talking about it is that another shortcoming of the Apple TV ecosystem is, I think, exclusive content. Like you were saying, it's a Netflix box and it's $160 and it's expensive, and there are other things that play Netflix just as well or comparably. One of the noteworthy things that's not on the Apple TV device is, of course, Amazon Video, which we were just talking about, and how Amazon Video is going around spending a boatload of money on content in addition to Netflix. So it's interesting how that's also developing, because they don't make an Apple TV app, and that is not a thing that they do.
Yeah, but you know, Apple's maybe opening up studios and doing their thing too. So
right now they're just doing that Dr. Dre piece about his life, which I'm inclined to believe Jason Snell's assessment that it might wind up being a piece for Apple Music or an Apple mm-hmm. Music exclusive in some manner. That it might not necessarily lead to a service of things, but it could wind up being in the catalog of a future service. But right now, it is noteworthy in its uniqueness rather than the scale of the number of things that they're doing.
There you go. I don't see, at least as it stands, there's really not a lot about the Apple TV that makes it stand out. Because again, we've got a lot of near carbon copies. And then, Amazon can say, well, we've also got these things and we're about to have even more. And you know, like one of the things that kind of, cause I pay for Prime, because I am antisocial at times and don't like to go to the store. So I order things off Amazon, and they arrive in 2 days. It's a great thing.
Do you have Prime now?
I do not have Prime now because I live in the middle of the country and it makes me sad.
It's the best. It's one of those conveniences, like the Wi-Fi water pitcher, where it's just like, this is so embarrassing. I can't believe I'm using this. Oh my God, I can track the driver. They're on their way.
That's awesome.
It is so strange. But
what are some of the things you've Prime now'd, or can you say?
Saltine crackers.
Were you sick, or do you just like saltine crackers?
No, a couple weeks ago I was horribly ill, but I got saltine crackers. I got water. You can get water. Bottles of water. You can... Forget water pitchers.
In California? No.
Yeah. And you can... I've ordered Listerine. I mean, there's just... little tiny travel toothpastes that I needed. It's just
Whoa.
Like it is bananas, the stuff that is on there. And as I pointed out to Marco when we first talked about Prime Now in our preceding episode, is that Sprinkles Cupcakes is also available on there, but unfortunately you have to spend $30 in cupcakes.
Damn you, Joe. Damn you and your Sprinkles music.
Isn't that just like drill into your brain and you can't think? You know, it wraps itself around the cerebral cortex. But the thing is that...
It's out of phase.
Temporally out of phase? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I think it's a temporal phase, but it also might just be the holodeck acting up.
Oh, great. You've watched too much Star Trek now. You're at the end of your Voyager run.
I have actually come to the end of my voyage.
Well, you finished it out?
And I started watching, what's the Deep Space Nine?
Uh-huh.
Does it get better? After, like, the first episode, suddenly, this guy was like, he was talking to this woman, and then he made, like, this weird noise that sounded like, what's his name? Frank Brown. Golly, I can't think of his name. James Brown. He like, and isn't this just crazy? Or something like that. And I'm like, is this how this is going to be? Is this real life?
I will tell you this. The first two seasons of any Star Trek, modern Star Trek series, are rough.
Mm-hmm.
And Deep Space Nine is no exception. I know that you just watched Voyager, so you went through the first two seasons of Voyager.
I made it.
Yeah, those were not great seasons, I would say, in my personal estimation. I don't know if you enjoyed them, but...
I don't remember having as much like concern as I have watching this first episode of Deep Space Nine. So
yeah,
it was okay, but maybe like you said, it still took a while to get the characters to kind of gel.
Yeah, and it's the same for Deep Space Nine. It takes a while for the characters to gel. Also, they've limited themselves by putting themselves on a station, which doesn't go anywhere, and all of the action comes to them. And they have shuttles which go to the action, but they're just shuttles, so it's not really like impressive scale of action. So it takes a while for them to sort this out. And as such, I would actually recommend Max Temkin's accelerated viewing schedule for Deep Space Nine, where he has arranged a number of episodes in order to get you into the series quickly. At least until you get to where the Dominion pop up, and then you can just start watching all of the episodes because they get significantly better. I think that it is actually kind of rough going. I know that our esteemed friend Jason Snell, who loves Star Trek so much, gave up on Star Trek Deep Space Nine in its original run and has never revisited it.
Wow.
Because it was in the first two seasons where it was dreadful. So
I'll have to check out that Max Timken thing then, because when I watched it, I was like, no, but I've been enjoying watching Star Trek and this is just making me so uncomfortable.
It's one of those things where I don't like it when somebody tells me, oh, well, it gets so much better after the first two seasons. Cause it's like, what do you mean? I got to watch like 26 hours. Oh, wait, no. my brain has failed. I have to watch 52 hours of like horrible stuff in order to get to the good stuff. It's just like, are you joking?
That's not a deal I want to make.
No, it sounds dreadful. So whenever somebody is recommending Deep Space Nine, it's always like with that caveat of like, oh, it gets so much better. And it's like, but that's an enormous hurdle.
A lot to get over if you choose to watch all of them. So, I have different tastes than all of you, because in discussing the things that made me happy or I enjoyed about Voyager, I've come to understand that these are things that most of you people don't.
What do you mean by that, Micah?
What do I mean, you people?
Yeah.
Those who have steeped themselves in Star Trek don't like Neelix. I get it that his Kes area, like the Kes section of Neelix was really creepy and weird. But after Kes left, and give it a little bit more time, and Neelix, I don't care what everyone else thinks, Neelix was one of my favorite characters because he was, I don't know, there to try to make people feel better. And like, they're stuck out in the middle of nowhere, and his job was to really try to help others. And he always was a very caring person. And then like his relationship with Tuvok, So the caveat here, I do get teared up pretty easily, so that's just something to keep in mind. But no joke, I teared up whenever Tuvok did a dance for Neelix when he left. I was like, oh my God, he's dancing for him. It was just so sweet because I've always had that friction back and forth. And I love the episode where Tuvok lost his memory and Neelix helped him kind of get back into the swing of things. And then I also liked Kes until bad things happened, and then I didn't like Kes at all anymore.
That episode, so bad.
Oh, it's so bad.
Yeah, and so I gotta say, with Voyager, I've watched it all, I think. I think I might have skipped over some in the first and second season, so please no quizzes. But I've seen a lot of things, especially the major things.
I've seen a lot of things.
I have favorable opinions of some of the episodes. Like I actually really like Bride of Chaotica. I think it's just over the top and goofy and silly and camp and hilarious. It doesn't make any sense why they're holographic beings from another dimension who have taken over the holodeck and forced it to this thing where the safety protocols aren't working. It doesn't that's dumb, but it's just fun watching these characters behave that way. I like Tinker Tenor Dr. Spy, in which the doctor is so overloaded with all of the extended programming that he's added to himself in order to be a more well-rounded person that he starts having these horrible daydreams which interfere with things, but for some reason a spy ship is tuning into the daydreams. And it makes a horrible misunderstanding about it. It's not as bad. Overall, it's just that there are some real stinkers in there that can really ruin it for you. And it does face the same problem that Deep Space Nine was, where it's like a really steep curve at the beginning. And it's hard to really care about many of the male characters very much. I like Chakotay in Abstract, but as a like it, I just don't care. Like,
yeah, so,
and Chakotay episodes are so boring to me.
They're so boring. They're so boring. Yeah, I, Chakotay, I'm just like, can you just go somewhere? No, I didn't like Tom Paris until he and B'Elanna got married and they had a kid. Like, after that, and he kind of...
That was the end of the show.
I know. Well, okay, so while she was still pregnant and after they had gotten married, and so we had more episodes to go, and he was like... I don't know. He settled down and stopped being a dude bro. Then I quite enjoyed Tom Paris, but before that, so yeah, for most of the show, I was like, oh god, not Tom. And I stopped disliking Harry Kim as much as I did in the beginning, and he just kind of became an annoyance that sat on the side anything.
He's not really like even an annoyance to me. He's just sort of like wallpaper. or I guess. Bulkhead paper. He doesn't do much of anything. And I like Tuvok. In the Tuvok focused episodes, they do really good jobs with Tuvok. But in most of the episodes, they're not really focused on Tuvok, so you don't get much service for the character. I like B'Elanna. I like Seven, of course. I don't like the outfit they gave Seven because I think.
Neither do I.
I really do think that it telegraphs a certain message about the character that undermines what they're trying to do. Like,
which is what Kate Mulgrew was having a problem with in the whole like real life drama thing.
Yeah, except she shouldn't have taken it out on Jeri Ryan.
Yeah.
But I really do. I think that Jeri Ryan did a good job. I like the character of Seven. I like the way that she acted and dealt with the scenes that she was given. There was that one time she had acted like she was a child, which I was just like, this is weird. Because she's like in a cat suit.
Out.
Yeah. So, but, I mainly objected to the wardrobe stuff because it's just like, I really wish you guys had some more confidence in what you were doing that you didn't do that. Like,
right, that you didn't feel like you had to. And there's the one episode where she's kind of like trying to be a real girl again, not a puppet, but a real girl. And she's in she's on the holodeck and she like has her implants covered up and stuff like that. And she requests a uniform. And it was like, why? Like, this could, I don't know. It just is so weird that it took that long to even talk about her getting a uniform instead of wearing what she wore. But in that same episode, Joe, the thing that, like, I don't know, I've never, like, raged at the show as I did at the point whenever she asks Chakotay if there's too much sodium chloride in the soup, and then he tastes it. And then he holds his finger up to her and she licks his finger. And I'm like, oh, did you have to do that? Why? Why did we need to do that? And it wasn't like, so I don't mean to sound like I'm trying to, you know, desexualize her, because I don't mean that. And it had been a different thing if she had like grabbed his hand or something. But it was like he had held it up to her and it rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah.
I was not pleased.
Well, that was just very strange, because there was nothing organic about that at all. It really should have been a relationship between Chakotay and Janeway. At the very beginning of the series, it certainly seemed like it would eventually go that way, but it definitely didn't at the end. And it felt very haphazard. It was much in the same vein as like Troy and Worf, where you're like, what?
Right. Yeah.
Like, no. It's interesting. So yeah, I don't like super hate it, but it's interesting to me that you also watched Voyager before you watched Deep Space Nine, because that came before it. So it's like really also hard to adjust to that in terms of like the timing and like when the episodes were made, because now you're going from something that like wrapped in, what was it, like 99 or
I think it was,
or 2003.
Yeah, I know it was at least I know it was past 2000. Okay. I don't know exactly when, but
yeah, it might have been Deep Space Nine that wrapped in 98 or 99, because they overlapped for a few years. But the first two seasons of Deep Space Nine were when Next Gen was still on the air, So it's old. So you're starting with something that is super old.
So what happened was I started watching, I didn't know original series. I started with The Next Generation. I don't know. The original series is not for me. And I remember watching it when I was a little kid, and I didn't watch it. Anyway, started with The Next Generation. And what happened was I was reading, I think it was on like Wikipedia, the way that you're supposed to go or whatever, the way that they were made. And I misread. And I was already like, I was almost, I don't know, 2/3 of the way through Voyager. And I hopped back into that Wikipedia article to look up something else and realized, and I was like, no, that's not where I was supposed to go next. This is so frustrating. But of course I wasn't going to stop at that point because I'd already invested with the characters. So it was illogical for me to stop watching the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so that's fine. I was just curious why you did it. But the really weird part for you now will be going into Enterprise, which is by the same production people as Voyager, for at least initially. So then you're gonna get some whiplash if you do that. But you better hurry up though, because CBS.
I know. That's what I keep thinking. Yeah, listeners, if this even makes it in the show, who might not know, I don't know. CBS is probably going to be gobbling up all of Star Trek once its new thing launches, so it won't be on Netflix anymore. And then I will have no reason to use my Apple TV. Whoa, full circle.
But you can run CBS All Access on it. Crickets.
Crickets and groans.
Yeah.
Story of my life. No.
But it's been good talking to you, Marco, and I'm glad we somehow got to Star Trek. It's fascinating. I'm very thankful that you agreed to do this. So once again, I doff my hat to you.
Did you intend to say Marco? Was that a joke?
Oh, crap. Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, what's the M's? I replaced one M with another M. No.
It's like, I'm going to let this ride, except he's saying that he's glad he talked to me, so I don't think that he meant to.
No. Hey, so Marco, listening at home in his free time or at his office with his Bluetooth headphones, sorry. And I totally meant it. That was a sick burn on you, bro.
Sick burn! Oh, you need some aloe vera for that.
No,
burn.
Okay. Micah, stop.
Yeah, I'll stop.
So we're done. Bye-bye.